This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. When teenagers started showing up at the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin with severe lung damage, doctors weren't sure what to make of it. Normally, a young, healthy lung would be full of cavernous airways. Instead, doctors found a complex web of gunk filling the chambers of the lungs. It looked like a severe kind of pneumonia, but it didn't make sense. Then doctors found something linking these teens. They all vaped. Dr. Lynn DeAndrea and Dr. Michael Meyer were two of the first people who discovered this link at the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. Dr. DeAndrea is the medical director of pulmonary services at the hospital, and Dr. Meyer is the medical director of the pediatric intensive care unit. Meyer starts by explaining what he knew about vaping before these patients appeared in the ICU.
In pediatrics, we knew a lot about smoking, right? So the typical combustible cigarette. And how we've worked for decades about trying to get combustible cigarettes and smoking cessation and prevention of smoking in the pediatric population. And the rates had dropped over the years, which we said, great, you know, we're successful. It's part of all of our screening. There's been a history of asking questions in pediatrics. Vaping, I think, snuck up on us. You know, and I can speak from, you know, own experiences about kids with it, and you're like going, when did this start? How did you get into this? And so the effects of it, from an ICU standpoint, it was just a question. It didn't really seem like it played into a lot of what we were doing. And I think it was an underestimation of the ramp up that was happening in the community. We didn't have the canary yet that said, you have a problem in your community.
And then, of course, the canary came around. How did this all begin for you? When did you start to see something peculiar coming up?
You know, I guess if you talk about sort of the perfect storm or the timing, there had been two prior kids. One person who had come in early June, and one was actually still in the hospital in late June. We knew they had probably inhaled something. We didn't exactly know what, thought it was just sort of isolated episodes. And then that 4th of July week when three more kids came in within 2 days, I think that's when we started putting things together that this was a problem, that these kids were inhaling something. We didn't really know this something. They all had vaping in common. But, you know, back then, I think we all should confess we were very naive, and we thought it was just that there was some person out in the community who was maybe making contaminated products. I don't think any of us ever imagined it would spread around the country like this. But it was that 4th of July weekend when you suddenly had four kids in the hospital who were all having similar symptoms and problems.
What were some of these similar symptoms and problems that they all exhibited?
When they came in, they all had coughing, shortness of breath. A lot of them had fevers. Those were kind of the acute symptoms that brought them to the hospital. Although in retrospect, for probably the month to 3 months before, they had been having some nausea, decreased appetite, weight loss.
These are some pretty serious symptoms, especially for children. So when you looked at the number of cases and when you started to really examine what was going on with them, what did you find? How did you link it back to vaping?
If you looked at their symptoms with the fever, the coughing, you looked at their chest x-rays, which showed what we call infiltrates in their lungs. The very first thing that we thought about was infection. We thought there was some infection going around. They had some sort of pneumonia. But we didn't know what the infection was, and because the pneumonia looked so severe, they all went and had a procedure called a bronchoscopy, where we try to get cultures to see what organisms are growing. And when we were doing the bronchoscopies, we realized it didn't look like an infection. An infection should have very thick mucus down there, almost like pus in the lungs, and we didn't see that. Instead, the airways just looked very red and sore. The cultures were coming back negative. So we realized it wasn't probably an infection. And then again, the common theme was that all these kids had been vaping, which then went along with some sort of inhalation type injury.
And this gets back to some misconceptions, I think, about vaping, or juuling as I've heard it called as well, that it's safer than cigarettes to some extent. And I know there's not a lot of research about this really yet because this is a relatively new phenomenon. But when you look at the lungs of someone who has smoked for a very long time and you compare them to what you see in these vaping cases, what are the differences? How do these two things compare?
Someone who's been smoking combustible cigarettes, it's more like there's probably, the lungs almost look like they have soot in the lungs. They're gray, they're black.
And we see that also with smoke inhalation.
Yeah.
You know, it's very different. The combustible products, it really does. It looks like the end of a fire. You know, we'll go down and do a bronchoscopy and you'll actually pull up the black soot from smokers or people that have had other inhalation type injuries. The inhalation that you see from chemicals looks very different than someone who's been involved in something that actually burned. And I think that it's distinguishing. And that's at the gross level of things. When you look at the chest x-ray, there's a fairly typical pattern of this interstitial pneumonitis is probably the best way of describing it, which is just inflammation. You know, that the chemicals or the burned products is causing an inflammatory response where our immune system is reacting to it, which is far down the list when one patient shows up at your door, right? And that's when we talk about the first patient who really was the prime case came early. The second one was in the ICU when Dr. DeAndre's group was bringing the other kids in. So it's a combination then of having a group of teenagers in the hospital at the same time whose pattern of disease doesn't follow the pattern that we're accustomed to seeing. And at a frequency that's not a normal frequency. You know, if this would be like this time right now, because it's December, we're flush with viruses. And little kids that are sick. A very different pattern of disease to what we saw this summer. And that's why we do what we do. It's to recognize these differences. I know one of the quotes that I saw out there after we had gone public with this, someone said, this is every day in an ICU. Someone showing up with pneumonia and respiratory failure. How do you sort out that this was related to vaping?
As you were sorting out kind of what was happening, how did you move forward? Once you identified that vaping was an issue in these cases, where did you go from there?
Even though I think we started to suspect that there was some sort of inhalation injury, each of those kids got their own unique workup, though. So they all got their infectious workup. For some of the kids, we worried that there was a rheumatologic problem. There was one person we worried who had lost a significant amount of weight, that maybe there was an oncologic problem. And so everybody still was treated as a unique patient as we were kind of moving, you know, as the week went on.
Which is important, I think, at the beginning. You know, anytime you have an outbreak of something, you're looking at individual patients. And so from a diagnostic standpoint, which is what we're trained to do and what we're good at, is the diagnosis and the management of disease. We have our patterns where you put together symptoms and then you move along to prove and disprove. It's classic investigation, scientific methodology. You start crossing things out until you get to the point of a diagnosis. So each and every one of these kids that we had seen had that same type of process going on. The nice thing in terms of a diagnosis and putting this all together is having that group of kids that were here at the same time with the same people taking care of them. And that led to a lot of questions. And I think it was actually Brian Carroll, the pulmonary fellow, who was scouring through all the medical records saying, no, this is another vaping kid. And hey, look, this one's vaped too. It's the history taking skills. That's part of being a physician, and especially in pediatrics, is understanding the history of the disease and the social family history of the child that plays into it, because it's more than the symptoms they show up with. And we take care of more than just a kid. We take care of the family as well.
How did people take these diagnoses? I mean, first of all, what were they diagnosed with? But how did they take the news?
Some of it was later. The initial kids, as we were working them out, it was thinking, well, this is a bad pneumonia. We're worried that there's a chronic disease, and this is just the initial symptoms. Parents get really scared with that kind of information because they're thinking long-term illness. This isn't what my kid is supposed to be. So we go through a lot of those things. But then as we tease through it, eventually the kids all said, yeah, I vape. they would tell you the last time they vaped and everything else. The families varied, which I think is a fascinating part of this, because you talked a lot about safety, and vaping is considered to be safer, and I put that in air quotes, than what cigarette smoking is. And that's not true when it really boils down to it. And families, there's some families that knew nothing. They thought it was a candle in their kid's room, because you don't smell smoke, you smell flavor. There's other families that they said, well, I'd rather have him vaping than smoking cigarettes. And then there's families that do it all together, and it's not viewed as abnormal because there's adults in the family that are vaping. It's a wide range about how that was regarded. That's just a societal question, which comes back to our message, right? Vaping, kids, not legal, not supposed to have access. We as pediatricians say that this is dangerous, and we did not know that this is what was going to be the danger. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And then as an ICU doc, this is what I deal with. The real problem is the nicotine. It's the exposure to chemicals. It's the long-term effects on a child's body that is maturing while they're doing this. And these are the unknowns. It took us 40 years to figure out cigarette smoking was bad for you. Vaping's been going on for 3, 5, right? We're just at the beginning of this crisis.
This gets to a misconception that I've heard from some people who vape. They've said, well, the issue at hand in these kinds of cases is that they were vaping products that you're not supposed to vape, knockoff products, specifically things with marijuana in them. You know, if you're doing it right, then vaping is fine for you. What would you say about that?
There's researchers out there who will someday still figure that out. I truly think, though, the bigger question, though, is with these kids is the addiction that they're left with. These products are getting down into middle school kids and high school kids, and they are significantly addicted to these products. Whether they want to stop or not, they physically can't. It's not going to hurt you tomorrow or today if you vape, but these long-term consequences and what these products do to the growing brain and their cognitive development, you know, I think we're just starting to understand, but that kind of addiction is scary what these kids are going through.
I think you bring up great questions that we're still looking for the answers. Is it one thing versus another? Is it the way it was mixed? Was it mixed in a vape shop versus someone's basement? Or there's a lot of research that needs to be done in order to show people. There's been a lot of research about smoking. Traditional combustible tobacco. People still smoke, despite lots of evidence. Like, this is going to be bad for you in 40 years.
As you mentioned, there are still a lot of open questions, and I know that you're continuing to do research. What are the next steps for you?
We've been working with the primary care providers, the mental health providers in the community to try to find resources for these kids. We don't know how to do nicotine replacement in pediatrics. That's not something we've ever had to deal with. That's an adult issue. And so looking to our adult colleagues, a lot of times these kids perhaps aren't ready to quit. And so there's that whole mental health piece that needs to come in, or they're using these products to sort of self-medicate. And so, you know, I think that's where our in the hospitals, our initiatives are next, is to, again, out in the community, how to help these kids.
There's really three prongs to this. One is going to be research, right, to better understand what the natural course of vaping is, and then what are the underlying reasons why vaping occurs. And then we still have to understand, well, there's lots of people that go out and vape but don't get bad lung disease. We got to understand what's that difference, because there's always going to be patient-level differences with things. Then there's an education piece and a prevention piece. And then you're going to fall under advocacy with that, right? And that's legislative in most cases. And then there's management and the actual treatment of it. I think we've described pretty well this EVALI and what can happen in this extreme circumstance. And I think it's got to be regarded as an extreme circumstance. This isn't the normal thing that you're going to see. What you're going to see is kids with decreased exercise tolerance, what you're going to see is kids that aren't performing as well in school. These are all very subtle things, you know, a lot of neurocognitive behavioral things that take a whole lot more time, a whole lot more effort, and a lot of resources. Prevention's always better than the treatment for this. And I know we've been working a lot on the advocacy side here. Right now I'm trying to develop a nicotine replacement plan in the ICU because I think this is something we missed with the first group of kids because we didn't really understand the amount of nicotine these kids had been exposed to and for how long and what the withdrawal effects were. I got to see that a couple weeks ago with a kid who realized that he's probably 2 to 3 Juul pods a day. And you take that away because you're here in the ICU and you can't take anything by mouth because you're sick. Yeah, vaping's by mouth. So their nicotine use. How do you replace that? You know, it's the first time I ever prescribed a nicotine patch. I'm a pediatrician. I'm like, there's nicotine lozenges. You know, you see about Nicorette. There's all these products that are out there for the adults and about how to get out of the smoking habit. Well, do we adapt? We're doing it off-label, trying to figure it out as we go. Those are hard spots to be in with it. But that's how we're going to advance the science.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Meyer, Dr. DeAndrea, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing so much of your work.
Well, thank you for being here.
Yes.
Dr. Lynn DeAndrea is the Medical Director of Pulmonary Services at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, and Dr. Michael Meyer is the Medical Director of the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit at the hospital. They were both part of the team of doctors working to help teens whose lungs were damaged by vaping. You can find more of our coverage on this topic at WUWM.com.